Okay, so brothers and sisters, for those who don't know, my name is Brother Lou. I want to welcome everyone to another Black Wallets meeting, town hall, another Black Wallets Matters town hall meeting. These are conference calls, so even though they're called town hall meetings, you are able to participate from anywhere in the country. So as you know, when you guys came in, I asked you for your first name, and I addressed you as either brother or sister. And the reason we do that, we address one another as brother and sister out of a show of respect and solidarity. During these town hall meetings, we do not discuss religion. We do not discuss the black male and female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. The reason we do not discuss those topics is because they're opinion-based, and we will go back and forth forever and ever and ever, and no one will be right and no one will be wrong. We can discuss politics as it relates to black people here in America and how we can use it to improve our situation. But again, like I said, we don't want to get into which party did what and who didn't do whatever. For all the guests on the call, and we have a few this evening, I want to tell you guys a little bit about this organization or what Black Wallets Matter is about. So if you haven't watched the blueprint yet, which goes into detail, great detail, Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and start using the power of the black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spent $1.3 trillion last year. So if we were able to pool our resources and practice group economics, we could have a major impact to transform the black community. This organization, the priorities of this organization is to address black poverty, which affects over 70% of single black mothers, black unemployment, which is more than 50% compared to whites, and this wave of racially motivated police brutality where these officers are killing our unarmed brothers and sisters and getting away with it. So here's how we plan on addressing these issues. So as I said, we are a member association, and as a member association, we collect membership dues. We are not a nonprofit. This organization is not a nonprofit, so we do not collect charity. We collect membership dues, and as a member, you are entitled to certain benefits, just like a union. We are structured, we will be structured as a B corporation, which is a benefit corporation. Benefit corporations are businesses that exist to serve a particular group of people or organization. So Black Wallets Matter exists for the purpose of conducting business to help the black community. The benefit of that, as opposed to a nonprofit with some nonprofit structures, such as 501c3s, you have a limit for how much you can spend on lawyers, and you have really tight regulations on what you can spend your money towards. As a 501c4, you have a little bit more room, but there's still a limit on what you can spend in regards to legal, for legal and political reasons. So as a B Corp, we are able to spend whatever it is we deem necessary to make the most amount of effect. So for those of you who don't know, like you don't pay attention to what's going on in politics, the Koch brothers, a few years back, they started this thing called Citizens United, and basically what it did was it granted businesses, corporations specifically, the power to invest in these super, to contribute to these super PACs for these politicians. So this is why you'll have like some no-name brand in, I believe that was, Wisconsin, they did that. Got some guy from out of nowhere, and then because they were able to contribute so much money, he wound up becoming a governor, and they disbanded the unions and all the other kind of crazy stuff they did out there. So we want to use their same strategy to our benefit. Back to the membership. So memberships start at $10 for the silver level, 25 at the gold level, and 50 at the platinum. Our goal within the next 3 to 5 years is to get 1 million association members. With the 1 million members, the organization would generate over $300 million a year in revenue. with generating over $300 million a year, we could get a $1 or possibly $2 billion loan. And with that kind of money, we can buy large-scale businesses such as manufacturing plants and supermarket chains and, you know, some of the really, really large businesses. And we can employ hundreds and possibly even thousands of our brothers and sisters. So once we have these businesses, so our thing is to buy existing businesses, buy businesses that are already going concerns, businesses that are already generating profits. We have another strategy that also incorporates buying businesses that correspond to minority set-asides or government contracts. So currently there are millions of dollars that the government is allocating for minority contractors, but because we do not have businesses in those industries, the contracts either go unfulfilled or they get pulled back. So one of our strategies is to research the contracts in the industry that are available and then go and buy an existing business in there. So let's say the government wants boots, we would go and buy a boot manufacturing company, and you know, and now we're able to get, you know, a sizable, you know, a large contract from the government. So that's what one portion of the profits will be used for. Well, that's what the goal is of the membership association. So from the profits from these businesses, we will create community resource centers in major Black cities to provide educational and occupational training to help more of our brothers and sisters enter the job force with good paying jobs. So when I say occupational training, that means we want to help brothers and sisters learn skills like trades, right? So plumbers, electricians, carpenters, welding, you know, things like that. We also have a brother here who's he's in the transportation industry. And so like one of our immediate goals will be to help a lot of our brothers, especially the youth, help them get CDL training and immediately deploy them into the transportation industry because they need drivers. The community resource centers will also give our youth a safe place to go instead of hanging outside on the streets and getting in trouble. And so while the youth are there, we're going to give them a culturally immersive experience. So they're going to like relearn their history. They're going to learn how to learn conflict resolution strategies and critical thinking. And you know, we're going to reinforce their positive self-esteem. We have brother Kareem, remember, he has an organization which this organization stemmed from. It's called Wheelchairs Against Guns. And this is a process that we are already doing, and it has been proven effective to work in the school system. So we're not starting from scratch when we say that we are going to implement these things. They are already happening. In addition to that, though, we want to teach these children computer programming skills, right? So Brother Kareem and I, we have this go back and forth every now and then about should the kids get sports or should they get something academic or whatever. I believe they should learn stuff like computer programming and, you know, how to build stuff, woodworking, working with their hands, engaging their minds, as opposed to allowing them to just blow off that steam just playing basketball or boxing or, you know, some other kind of sport. I don't feel we need any more sports and entertainers. We need people who can, you know, excel in other fields. Okay, so that will allow them to take advantage of opportunities in the modern world. So another portion of the profits from the business will go towards hiring lawyers and lobbyists in Washington to protect and enforce our civil rights. This will make it harder for law enforcement to kill our unarmed brothers and sisters and get away with it. Other groups in this country, they have successfully used laws that were put on the books for us to protect their members, and it's about time that we start using them for the purposes that they were intended. If you know, for anyone who had watched the blueprint, I did some research, and the NAACP only spend $334,000 or something like that on lobbyists last year, whereas the LGBT community spend $1 million and some change, and that's actually just one organization. And then a Jewish organization spent $3 million. So we're being outspend three times and 10 times. So that, you know, that lets everyone understand why some of these other organizations have juice, why they have pull, why they're getting laws that are favorable, and we are not. So it's just a matter of playing the game, allocating the money to get the people in there to represent us the way that they're supposed to. One of the other things that this organization is going to do with the 1 million association members is start holding our politicians accountable for delivering on the promises that they make to us. If they do not deliver on the promises, then we have 1 million people who have brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles that can say, listen, this person does not get the vote. They're cheating us, and so we will no longer put them in office. And that will give us real power. So now, obviously, these are very lofty goals, and it will take years of hard work to achieve. So to get the ball rolling and to get a quick win and to show progress, we have set a current goal of 2,000 founding members. So again, you know, for anyone who watched the blueprint, you'll see that we made a call for 2,000 members who are excited and committed to helping the Black community at the, you know, from the start where we are now. The reason we want the 2,000 members is so with the membership dues that we collect at that level, we can create our first proof element to show to the entire Black community how a group of unrelated Black people from all across the country, how we united, how we came together, and we created something for the benefit of us all. It's a very selfless act, and it basically tells our brothers and sisters, we love you even if you don't know us. That's going to be very, very powerful. That's a powerful thing to express to our brothers and sisters. And this will gain, you know, this will raise the visibility of this organization. It will make this organization more valuable, and it will create a snowball effect where more brothers and sisters will want to join us and help us build the next phase of this plan. So although the goals of this organization are very lofty, it has been broken down to very small compounds, and these things are doable. So here's what's happening, though. We haven't gotten the 2,000 founding members as fast as we thought we would. So we thought we would be able to get the 2,000 members within 3 to 4 months. This organization has been launched since March. So far, we have 136 members as of today. So I want to thank some of the new brothers, some of the new members. Recognize Brother Gary Manis, I believe. I haven't looked at everyone else to see who are the new members, but you know, I just want to thank some of the new members who came in. So last week we were at 100 and about 30 members. We lost 2 members, but so that means we actually gained 8. Right. So I want to thank you to all of those. For anyone who's on the call for the guests, so a lot of people, they are concerned about how the money is managed and how it's used. Well, with 136 members, we currently do not meet the revenue requirements to be a certified B corporation. So you have to have somewhere in like $5,000 or $8,000 a month in monthly revenue. We are nowhere near that to be certified. We have a regular bank account, and I have pledged my other business assets to qualify for the merchant account that Black Wallets Matter has. So if anyone here is a business owner and you know to go, you know, to get a merchant account, you know, the credit checks and some of the things that you have to go through, you know, if you have to say what are your projected revenues and blah, 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 you know, processing fees. I have my other business, which is a digital marketing agency, and also my real estate business or whatever. So I pledge those things to qualify for Black Wallets Matter. We spend about $4,000 to $5,000 a month on advertising to bring in new members. So as you guys know, you know, all you guys who this is your first time, or you constantly see our content on Facebook, right? Where, you know, that we're paying to make that happen. So we have a monthly shortfall in regards to revenue, and I cover that out of my pocket. So I put that out there, so just in case if anyone is concerned about, like, you know, another Umar Johnson type situation where we raise the money and they're like, okay, cool, well, where the money is, you know, where's the money, who ran off with the money? Just letting you guys know there is no money to run off with. You know, if I run off, I'm running off with my own money. Because the vast majority of it comes out of my pocket, basically. But what we are going to do with the current membership rate, right, so we don't want to wait because we want to hurry up and put this proof element out there. We are going to make an investment in a new, in a business, in an interim business that will be called the Black Wall Street Project. And right now, I am the chief cook and bottle washer. So I run the marketing and the email, but we have had some members contribute, specifically Sister Kokoya and Sister Trevain. So they have contributed with content, and I want to I want to extend the offer to anyone else. If anyone else is tech savvy or has copywriting skills, familiar with web development or has online marketing skills, and you want to volunteer your services, we definitely use that. We could also use someone to be like a secretary, so to help me keep things organized because my to-do list is ridiculous. But back to the Black Wall Street Project. So the Black Wall Street Project will consist of helping our brothers and sisters create businesses or helping them market and get more exposure for their existing business. I am a business owner of 20-some-odd years. I have a great deal of experience. But, you know, my way of doing business is really direct, right? So the bottom line is, are you selling to a customer? I don't play business. So I'm not going to sit here and talk with you and say, hey, you know, you need to go and get these business cards and you need to do this and you need to do that. When you interact with me at this Black Wall Street Project, I am going to say to you, who is your customer and how do we get to them? What is the most direct route? So just, you know, anyone who's interested, I'm just letting you know I drive kind of hard when it comes to business, because the bottom line is nothing matters unless there's a transaction. But we will help them with their presence. So we will help them with web design. We will give them affordable payments, so they can space out the design and the marketing. When I consult with someone in regards to a website, I don't just say, you know, tell me all the pretty things you want on the website. I think about it from a perspective of how can we get people traffic into that site so that this website can actually produce results for you. So that may require social media research. It may require keyword research and things like that. Just to give you an idea of what kind of experience we're talking about. So as I said, you know, Black Wallets Matter launched in March. We started in the Facebook page was zero. So now we have close to 20,000 likes, and we have more than 21,000 followers and 5,000 people on our email list. That's from a standing start of zero. So, you know, just to let everyone know that's the kind of things that we could help with this Black Wall Street Project. The other thing that we're going to do for those who do not have any business or people who are not quite sure where to start, we're going to walk them through some training that will show them a few different ways to make money online. That's what I do. That's what I've been doing since 2005, outside of my other investments. But that's, you know, my main day-to-day. And so I'm familiar with a lot of different strategies, a lot of different processes, and I can help people do the same. And so that pretty much sums up what this organization is about. I want to personally invite any guests on the call today after you go through this town hall meeting. If you hear what you like, I want to personally invite you to become a member. So normally we come on the calls and we just say, hey, if you want to become a member, you go. Last week we had a brother who came to me, well, he came on the call. He said, listen, you know, you need to be a little bit more direct because you're trying to grow something. You're trying to build something here. The name of the organization is Black Wallets Matter. That means that we cannot do anything unless we put our money where our mouth is. That may turn some people off, but we have something that we're trying to build here. And then again, at this stage, whatever you do, it would be a selfless act. Right, so there were corresponding benefits associated with each membership level, but again, like I said, because we did not get the people in as fast as we thought we were, and because I am pretty much like handling everything, we have been slow in rolling out the benefits because I have to try to make sure that these town halls run every week, and I have to make sure that the content is on the page, and then I take calls all day and things like that. So I'm just letting you know. So, you know, not trying to pull any fast ones here. the people who are members here, they will tell you, you know, you get my direct number, you can access me, we can chat about anything. So you can, so if, you know, I'm going to open up the call for the topic for our discussion. What I'm going to do is put the call into lecture mode. And if you have a question or a comment in regard to the topic that's on the floor, you can press *6 on your phone, and then that will put you in the queue. I will unmute your phone, and then you can question or chime in on the topic. We have a few people who have come in during the call, during my little speech here with my introduction. So I want to try to get their names first. Hold on. We have caller from 214 area code, 214-240 caller. Your first name, please.
Hi, my name is Monica.
Okay, Sister Monica, hold on for a moment here. Sister Monica. Okay, and then we have caller from 405-470 caller. Your first name, please. Caller from 405. Hello, caller. Okay. Caller from 405. They're trying to say something. And then we have, let's see here. We have caller from 646. Caller from 646-464. I'm sorry?
Crystal.
Mr. Crystal, okay. Crystal. All right. Okay. All right, so, oh, wait, and then we have another caller. Caller from 347-554.
Caller from Marcia.
Marcia, okay. All right, there we go. Okay, so I am going to, I'm going to put it in the lecture mode, and if you have any comments or questions in regards to the topic on the floor, then you can press *6 on your phone. Okay, so as we all know that while we have a serious problem with violence in our community, especially with the youth. Last week, I wanted to bring this up, but right before the call, my neighbor had, she came to the door, she was crying, and her son was jumped for no reason. So he's a little guy, kind of sort of, he was on the rough side of town, but he was there to manage his mother's rental property. And so the young guys, they saw him there, and they decided to create like a World Star video because that's what they did. They jumped on him and they were yelling World Star, and they broke his neck. And so she thought he was paralyzed, but so he had surgery today, and she said that he can, you know, he has feelings in all of his limbs except for one of his legs. So she's thankful for that. But this disregard for life and and sensationalizing it, especially with like social media, how are we going to communicate, or how are we going to combat that? Like, how are we actually going to make this impression on our youth that they need to that this is just not right? Because I believe that by them doing these things is what's causing the cops to feel like they can just kill us and have, like, no regard for our lives. I really believe that, because I think they're saying, if you guys don't value yourselves, and if your adults, the elders, if they're not going to take responsibility to check you guys or do whatever, then we're going to use whatever extremes or whatever strategies or techniques that we want to keep you in line. And, I'm really at the point where I'm thinking maybe this is like a lost cause, like really trying to focus on them. So for some of those who speak to me, you know, behind the scenes intimately, you know, I say, listen, we need to focus on the baby. But it's like it's going to be really hard to make progress because this current generation has to be that next generation of adults. And if they're not mentally ready and they're not prepared, then trying to help the babies is not really going to do anything because we're all going to be too old to do anything. So we're going to need their help. So if anyone has any comments or suggestions of what you think we can do to try to reach these youth, we spoke about a mentorship program a few weeks ago, and Brother Kareem took that cue and ran with the ball, and so the call was on a Thursday. That Sunday he put together this friends and family family day. And it basically, the goal was to get some of these kids off the streets for about 5 hours, if I wasn't mistaken. And I believe he rented a place and he brought in some video games, him and another partner. And they got some guys off the street, got some kids off the street when school was let out, because they know, you know, how things can be when kids first get out in the summertime or whatever. So that was one suggestion. And that was something that was actually put in play by one of our members after we discussed it. So if anyone has any other kind of comments or anything, you know, or questions, press star 6. I'll put it in Q&A mode, and, you know, let's try to figure something out. Just so you guys know, these calls usually last until about 11 o'clock. We do have a lot of people on the call, so please be mindful of the other people. I'm going to limit the time to about a minute or two for each question or comment because we do have a lot of people on the call this evening. So press star 6. Holy cow, we are flooded. All right, so we have Brother Kareem, Brother Jabari, Brother Erskine, Sister Crystal, Sister Bonnie, Sister Rhonda, Brother Taylor. Okay, cool. So we have a full house. Remember, everyone, please try to keep your comments or your questions to about a minute or two, and I will we'll start with Brother Kareem. Go, brother.
Hello, good evening, everybody.
Peace.
My name is Kareem. I'm founding executive director of Wheelchairs Against Gun. And I'm very in tune with the kids today and what's going on. And I don't believe that this, like, we could just write them off. What I do believe is, me and Brother Lou talk about this all the time, is making sure that the kids that are out there doing what's wrong right now, You know, God forbid, you know, they're going to meet their demise. You know, either they're going to get locked up, God forbid, come across a situation where it might take them away from the streets. What we need to do is make sure that the children behind them doesn't fill that void. So the goal will be, like, I understand the babies, but we have to seriously get some, like, if we could recruit some younger gentlemen. Like, I remember we had some younger gentlemen on the call. I don't know if he's on the call now, but, like, younger gentlemen to constantly, you know, instill in our young men something cool and positive. Because the goal right now, and it's sad that our competition are the rappers, everybody that's not doing anything that we're trying to do. You know, so we have to break that mold, and we have to become the cool people, in the children's eyes. And my organization, we're making a little bit of ground with that. And I just want to, you know, today we got our first grant for $1,000, you know, woo-hoo, but, you know, just to share that with the room. And we just have to constantly, but we can't write them off, because if we write them off, then it's just going to get worse, you know. So we have to just make sure that the kids that go to jail or whatever happens to them, that it's not, that the influx is not filled. You know, and that's what I'm trying to do. And the main thing right now that I'm noticing, that our competition, we have to be in competition with these cool dudes. So we have to find something that's really, really cool for these kids, and then they will latch on to us. Like with the PlayStation thing we just did, we had a huge outcome with that. We took a bunch of kids off the street, and they had fun. And we do this every Sunday for them. So now they start to look at, you know, kids, people that came from their community that were doing wrong, and now they start to see us as a cool people. And now they start to, you know, more and more come out, more and more, and then they open up and open up and open up. So that's the route that we have to take. So I think that's my 2 minutes, right, Brother Lou?
Yep. Thank you for chiming in. So just to reiterate, Brother Kareem says that we need to become a cool alternative. We need to make it cool. That's the debate that we usually have to get their attention and let them know, you know, doing positive is, you know, it's okay. And so what he said is, excuse me, that's why they started the PlayStation tournament. They got 100 kids off the streets. That's excellent, brother. Also, congratulations on getting that grant today. Our brother, next to me in the queue, we have Brother Jabari. Brother Isaiah, I have it written as Isaiah, but I know you pronounce it differently. But, brother, I see you. Our brother Taylor as well, Sister Rhonda as well. Okay, Brother Jabari, you up? Okay.
Okay, this is Jabari Goodman from Chicagoland, and I think, obviously, as all you guys know, we're, you know, known as one of the most violent cities on the planet right now. and if I had to put one word on it, and just growing up on the south side of Chicago, and you'd spend a lot of time with our youth, it's self-esteem. Right now, young black men in this country just don't feel good about themselves. If we look at, you know, how they dress, how we act, and we need to find a way to build up our self-esteem so we feel that we are superior. And it's my personal belief, and this is what I try to instill in the young African-American children that I deal with, that we are superior because no other race on this planet in modern history has gone through the civil rights struggle that we've gone through, the current one that we're going through now, through slavery, through Reconstruction, through everything that this country has thrown at us. And throughout history, you see that adversity builds strength. So we are the most dominant males on the planet, and it's just instilling that confidence in our youth, because whether it is the first black president of the United States or how we excel in entertainment or anything we put our mind to as a people, we dominate. And it is just time to dominate economics. It's time to dominate turning our communities around and not looking for the government to help us with anything, not looking for anyone, just looking within ourselves. And secondly, this is kind of off subject, I think I really liked your Black Wall Street, what you said about that. That's something that's helped me. I trade the Japanese yen, the Swiss franc, the British pound, and the U.S. dollar, and that is something that African America as a people, we just do not know enough about. We don't invest enough of our money. We're not in the stock market enough, and that is the ultimate equalizer. That is a way where you can open up an account just like any other white person can, and you can trade stocks, and you can do your research, and you can, and we can empower ourselves to do it. And there's nothing cooler than sitting at home and making $200,000 a year and not having to leave your house. And that is what I want to try to teach the African-American youth in the Chicagoland area, and you guys will be hearing a lot more about it. I think that's my 2 minutes. Sorry, I get a little winded, brother.
No, that's fine. Thank you, brother. That's your passion coming through. You know, Brother Kareem just wanted you to know that is exactly one of the tenets of the organization Wheelchairs Against Guns, the self-esteem, because we realized that we did a deep dive and we were saying, well, why? You know, why are we so destructive? Why are we feeling like that? And yes, it is a self-esteem issue. It's because you feel like you have the weight of the world against you. You know, no one loves you or whatever it is. And so, yes, definitely, you're definitely hitting on something. And then, brother, yes, we do need to talk behind the scenes in regards to setting up some of these different facets of the Black Wall Street training. We are asking for anyone to, anyone that has a skill set that would be helpful to this, that wants to help us grow and, you know, build this library of information, you know, please participate, come in, you know, create a course. It can be an interview series, whatever it is you have available that would be beneficial. All right, brother?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes.
Nope. All right. So, brother, we have Brother Erskine. We have Brother Erskine and Sister Marcia. It's not Marcia. It's Marcia, right? Have you? I recognize you, Sister. Brother Erskine.
Hello, hello, Brother Lou. Thanks for having me on. This is Erskine Matthews. I'm calling out of Freeport, New York. And violence today is a very difficult topic to deal with in the African-American community. I recently attended a conference at NYU where they discussed violence as a health issue instead of a criminal justice one. And the argument that was made was that, like smoking, like getting people to exercise, violence is a behavior. And the health field is extremely qualified in changing the behavior of a large population. I had a chance to speak with Dr. Slutkin from the University of Chicago, and he has been implementing some of those policies in the Chicago area, and he's seen great effect in the reduction of violence amongst the youth there. He made very strong parallels to violence as a spread of a disease like Ebola, smallpox, or something like that. He said that, you know, it spreads from person to person until it affects an entire community. And he said when he brought his health techniques towards the topic of violence, he saw reductions somewhere around like 80% in certain areas. He's also taken this his method all around the world. I believe he's done some work in Ecuador and I think Haiti and a couple of other nations, Mexico, that have been very affected by violence. And he's made a lot of great progress. So I think that's something that we should definitely look into going forward.
Okay, brother. So that's an interesting perspective, something that we have never really heard. So like I said, so Brother Kareem and I, we actually go in and we kind of like research this stuff.
Right.
I would definitely like to talk to you. I would definitely like to get you back in the queue if this call doesn't run too late to expound on some of those strategies, like what would that encompass. I want to be respectful of the other people in the queue right now.
Right.
So if not, we would definitely like to speak with you behind the scenes if we're not going to be able to cover that on this call.
All right.
I want to get back to that because I want to know what those techniques and strategies are. All right, brother?
Right. I also had one other point that I wanted to make before you cut me off. I know I don't want to go over too much time. I understand this is Black Wallets Matter, and one of the things that's most important to this group is creating an economic stronghold for the African-American community. And recently there was this, I believe it's a website that's been launched. It's described as a Yelp for African-American entrepreneurs, where one of the largest difficulties that I face when trying to find Black businesses and shop there is actually finding them. It's very, you never know what store you're walking into. You have to do a lot of research, a lot of groundwork to figure out where the Black-owned
right.
restaurant is.
Yeah,
where
I don't mean to cut you off, but every week someone gives us another Black directory we're talking about. So.
Well, okay.
I'm not trying to cut you off, but, you know, we have more people jumping in the queue. But we are familiar with a lot of different ones and, you know, all the different Black directories and things like that. Actually, a few people some people that are on the call actually called me behind the scenes to help them create one.
Okay.
Our members propose that so we're familiar with a lot of them, brother. So.
Okay, yeah. No problem.
All right, and I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just trying to be respectful of the other people in the court, in the queue.
Yes, sir. All right, no
all
problem.
Right,
thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, peace. Sister Crystal, you're up. Hold on, sister. Oh, wait a minute. Sister?
Yes, I'm here.
Yep.
I'm from Harlem, New York.
Uh-huh.
And the question you put to the group is something I struggle with every day. I'm a founder of a new progressive school here in Washington Heights. and also a founder of a nonprofit. And I struggle with, you know, answering parents who come in every day about how we're going to keep their kids, especially their sons, safe, and, you know, solutions. And so one of the things that I like to do is I try and take kids out of the city as much as possible and expose them to, you know, someone made the comment about the ultimate equalizer. And I think exposing kids to opportunities that they don't necessarily have. So I started an equestrian program and a ski club, take these kids out, and we ski every week from January to March, and we horseback ride every week. We're going to Ecuador next month, and we go places that a lot of these kids don't normally get to go. And I find that one of the things that is really important, just creating empathetic awareness to each other, and by some of the trips and adventures that we go on, you know, helping each other. We have kids of all physical abilities, and when you're spending time and in a place that you're not comfortable with, you know, whether you're camping, you've never been out in the middle of the woods, and the kid that you might have been struggling with is now your buddy and your partner and helping you. You know, I'm hoping that I'm helping kids lay a foundation to resolving conflict in a way, you know, outside of their normal comfort zone. And I've had the opportunity to be given a large campsite just in the last month of about 40 buildings, 25 cabins, and trying to wrap my head around, you know, getting more kids out of the city and having these opportunities. So I don't know if I've run into my 2 minutes, but I'm going to try and make your calls every Thursday because I think it's important.
Thank you, sister. So the Wheelchairs Against Guns program is in New York City. And so there could be a possible opportunity to have the members come out and conduct a workshop at your school, so that way you can see, and seeing as you are an administrator, you know, there would definitely be some synergies there. So I don't, you know, mm-hmm. maybe we can contact you behind the scene.
That sounds great. I like I said, I have children of all abilities. I have students in wheelchairs that come and participate in all these activities. So. I'd welcome that. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep, thank you. And next we have Sister Bonnie. Sister Bonnie?
Good evening, everybody.
Hey, how you doing, sister?
I'm doing good. I got a comment. I had a brief conversation with my niece earlier today regarding after-school programs for kids in her area, and a lot of them were state funded, and I made a suggestion to her that maybe that she might want to look into doing a nonprofit and trying to enlist as many African American teachers, former teachers, parents, grandparents into helping her with this, because they literally cut out the program completely for 3 black schools. And that does nothing more than hurt our kids, and it pushes them closer to the street where we don't want them. And I figured that in doing that, these people could help with tutoring, helping them with homework, teaching them life skills, teaching them social skills, teaching them who they are and history. And I think that would be a suggestion that might be beneficial across the country.
Okay, sister. All right. So you're saying to appeal to retired teachers and other administrators and help them try to form, I guess, after school programs or things like that for the
right. And that was something that I was thinking about earlier today when she made the comment, and she was like, well, what do we do? And I told her, well, maybe you want to start a nonprofit and just particularly for this purpose, give these kids someplace to go and something that they can do and something they can learn. And that's going to help. It's going to take a lot to do it. Everything that I've heard thus far are excellent, and they're all going to work, but they got to work in conjunction with each other.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
All right. Thank you so much, Sister Bonnie.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. Now we have Sister Rhonda. Sister Rhonda, you're up.
Yes. I just have a question. I mean, not a question, a statement, because the two sisters, Crystal and Bonnie, really took everything away from me. I don't have to say anything. But the mentorship with these children, because I did a 21st century program years ago for some children. And sometimes I agree with Sister Crystal, you have to take children out of their environment. Children live what they learn. You know, I'm not beating up on any parent or whatever, because we all walk this thing we call life. And what happens is some of the parents have their own difficulties, and they go back and to something that may not be comfortable for them. But if, like Sister Crystal was saying, they're going to Ecuador, they're doing a lot of things, taking them just out of their communities entirely. That thing, it would be great, because some of the kids that I did mentor, they were going to like maybe an upstate community in their own state. It really, they came back and they didn't function too well. So what Sister Bonnie was saying is great also. And it could happen in conjunction with a lot of things that were stated. And that's all I have to say about the matter.
Thank you so much, Sister Rhonda. Okay, so next we have Brother Taylor. Brother.
Yes, this is Taylor. Thanks for having me. I agree with everything that a lot of people is saying, and I had a comment, but now I have a question, and it's particularly regarding integration. Are we focused on integrating ourselves with other communities at all? I ask that because...
Well, brother, okay, so what we like to do is we got to try to keep this on this particular topic for now, and then if that's another topic, that's a whole other topic, and so if you want to talk about that, we can circle back to it. We can bring that to the floor. We can bring integration to the floor. I just wanted to, we have other people who are in the queue that want to comment in regards to this youth issue.
Okay. Right, so, as the lady said before, pretty much what I was going to say was taken. So I'll wait till the next come around.
All right, cool. All right. Yes, brother, pronounce your name again. All right, so I'm saying Isaiah. That's how I have it spelled. What is it? I'm saying, say it again for me, brother.
No problem. Isaiah's fine. Okay. I want to make a comment about how to save the youth, I guess. I would say that we need to maybe make like kind of like a police force for black men to be training the black kids to, you know, learn martial arts and different mental sciences and to learn how to arm and protect themselves. But I think we ourselves have to police our own community so that white police don't have to come into our community to police it anyway. And if they do, we're all there and ready for when they attack. So what I'm saying is we need to put all of the black males into a organization to where they're being not only physically trained but mentally trained to operate in their society. I don't think we should be running away from it at all. I think we need to just face it head on and confront the real problems. because not everybody in the black community is going to be for the black community. So we have to forge more of a national kind of thing to where we know who's who and who's not who.
I like that idea. What I thought you were leading up to was more of like the discipline thing, because that's something that I say, that we need more of these young brothers. They need the discipline, and if they don't want to comply or cooperate, then, you know, especially if they're learning martial arts or something, the sensei or whoever, he's able to give them a hard check. You know what I mean? And that's just part of the protocol, and that's, I think, one of the biggest problems we have right now. No one is holding these children responsible, accountable for their negative behavior. In many instances, their behavior is going unpunished, you know, and unreprimanded, undisciplined, and I think that's one of the biggest problems that we're having. So,
yeah.
But I see where you went with it a little bit, but, you know, just to give you a heads up, so this is not really, this is not a militant organization. We are focused on economics and politics. So, I mean, in regards to protecting ourselves, we have absolutely no problem with that. But, I'm just letting you know that that's not the move of this organization. We're being a little bit more strategic about it, because the truth of the matter is we're outnumbered, we're unorganized, and then there are other organizations or other ethnic groups who are way smaller than we are, who are more successful without using that. So they're paying attention to what's going on in America, right? So America is racist, and what white supremacy exists, but they're not using that as an excuse not to succeed and not to excel. And so that's the models that we're really paying attention to. But I'm not saying anything against what you're saying. I'm just letting you know, brother.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Okay. Thank you, brother. All right, sister. hello, sister.
Hi. Hey, my name is Marcia.
Yeah, I have it.
Yeah, I'm from New York. And I'm 18, so I guess I'm right up the alley for the youth, because I am the youth. So my opinion, honestly, is right now, like, I'm going through the college process. Like, I'm just about to start college, and I'm seeing all of these young boys today, you know, and young girls, and they're honestly, like, they're so misguided. That's their main problem. Is like, you ask a white kid what they're going to school for, they'll give you an actual, you know, like, place, like, they want to be, like, they want to be a doctor, they want to be a lawyer, they're going to try to go for this. You hear a black person, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm taking liberal arts. You know, like, yeah. So I really think that education is the key, and I feel like it starts at home. Like, I'm not blaming parents, but I'm saying they do play an important role, because I feel like African Americans are not geared towards the right jobs. Like, you see, the Chinese, they come here and they take on certain things. Indian people come here, they take on certain things, and they use that money to take on more things, and they just grow themselves as a people. Whereas African Americans, I feel like we're lost. You look at every black boy, his dream is to be a basketball player, a football player. When's the last time you heard a black boy say, my dream is to be a lawyer, my dream is to be, you know, president of the United States, you know, like, that's, I feel like that's the problem. They're not being geared, and I feel like they're not being geared towards the right jobs. Like, right now, my age, like, I try to guide my friends to do civil service jobs, because right now I'm in medical school. Like, I'm about to enter medical school because I got into a medical program. You know, I try to get a lot of my friends to be on board with that, you know, and some of them weren't. They didn't have their grades up. Their direction is wrong. And I feel like it has a lot to do with the media, and it has a lot to do with, like, all the different things that get in the way. And I feel like we can address that by gearing children more towards a field, or more towards something that they can profit off of when they grow older. You know, it's like, and to invest their money and not to spend it. You always see them buying Jordans instead of buying what they're supposed to be buying, like, or saving up or paying bills or whatever it is. You see the wrong direction, and I feel like that's the main problem. So I feel like, if you teach kids young, if you grab them young and you teach them a direction like how my parents did, they'd be on a better path, and they wouldn't have time to be in the streets messing around because they'd be too focused on something productive. So that's my opinion on the matter.
Sister, first of all, I want to thank you and welcome you. I believe you're the youngest caller we have ever had. you know, come to our youngest guest that we've ever had on one of these town hall meetings, and you are very well spoken, and you seem to have it figured out, and you give all of us hope for your generation, because if you're able to have your head screwed on right, then we know that there are some out there who would be receptive to some of the information that we want to share and some of the programs that we're trying to implement. So I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on the call, and I'm glad that we recorded this. Sister, I think we may need to make, like, a video of your segment. I don't know if you want to, like, send us a picture or something. We should put this on a Facebook page and be like, you know, a message from an 18-year-old to other 18-year-olds or something like that, because
yeah,
they need
I'd be
to
fine
hear
with
that. Okay, cool, right. So we'll definitely touch bases behind the scenes, sister. Thank you so much for your comments, all right?
All right, thank you.
All right, peace. All right, Brother Burke. Brother Burke. Brother, you're in the queue.
Hello, this is Christina.
Oh, wow. you're hopping all over the place. Why don't you just...
I'm on the same telephone number.
But you on a 973 number. All right, hold on. So let me... Okay, well, go ahead, Christina. You got to say this.
Okay, I just wanted to bring to the table black banking. There are not any attainable black banks, and our communities
Hold on, sister. We have people still in the queue on the topic of the youth.
Oh, okay.
So, right. So just, and now I have to re-tag you. So just hold that. And then, so we have brother, where was the brother who had the, I forgot his name. It wasn't Brother Erskine. It was another brother who had something that he wanted to bring to the floor. And I guess he'll just have to press star 6 again. But hold that thought, sister, and then you can come back in. But right now we are addressing the youth violence, everyone. So if anyone has a question or comment in regards to youth violence, that's what this particular cue is, and then we'll bring the next issue to the floor. All right, sister, let me – does that work for you?
Yes, that's good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, hold on. So let me – All right, so there you go. Okay, Brother Muda, I see you. Okay, so we have a caller from 708. Is this you? Hello, brother?
Hello.
Brother Cujo? Yes. Oh, no, this is not Brother Cujo. Your first name, brother?
Hello.
Yes.
My name?
Yes, brother, we can hear you. Yes, your first name.
Oh, okay. All right, because I didn't know if I was listening to a recording. This is Ron Thomas from Chicagoland area, Illinois.
Okay, brother Ron.
You sent me a couple of emails inviting me on. This is my first opportunity to actually tune in.
Okay, brother. Okay, so what we're doing is we're discussing this youth violence and, you know, possible solutions or suggestions of things that we could do to reach them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I did. I have been listening long enough, Lou, to get the gist of it, and that's really a broad topic. I'll make every effort to narrow my view and to give a little background on myself. I left corporate America in 1983, haven't looked back since. In 1993, launched a hair replenishing company to help heal and stop the loss of so many lives within our community and so many people being poisoned from hair care products. The company is called BioStrand. I'm not on to promote my company. I'm on to promote the consciousness that we really need to move into to heal and move ourselves forward. Now, when I look at the broad-based request that's happening from the foundation of your organization, it's a great idea. I've always seen that vision myself. One of our biggest challenges is trust. You know,
wait, brother. Hold on, brother Ron. Hold on, but we're trying to address the youth because we got a lot of people.
Okay,
in the queue.
Well, let me cut to the chase. Let me get right to that. Let me help you, brother. For me, okay, the first thing to do is cure our illness in terms of drug abuse and all those different environmental issues. Clean up the community. Give a better example to our children. It's good to get them away for a minute into a non-for-profit and encourage them. The problem is that they go right back home to the same effect that they left. So on a broad base, to help our children, we've got to help the older children that are in their 20s and 40s and 50s that are poorly exampling to our children. So and like I said, it's a broad mechanism for it. I know it sounds like I was talking off the subject, but the issue is that we've got to come inside the community. The whole vision of the Black Panthers, they fed children first. A panther births out of itself. And so that's the idea that they had, and that's the idea we need to understand. To close our gates to drugs, alcohol, guns, and the fact that that leads to the $4 million murder case that come into our community. And they're teaching our children through audio. We need to shut down all of these video games and just, hey, kids, you can't have it anymore. So those are some of the solutions. It sounds like a pressure response environment. So I would rather talk to you at a different time when it's not a time requirement on the subject. Okay?
Oh, absolutely, brother. You'll have so in the emails, I sent you a number to reach out to me. And then again, any time you can just. I'm sorry?
Man, this thing is so deep. You know, I've been watching this for 61-plus years. I've been an entrepreneur that long. And my greatest desire is to hire our felons, to hire and let them work with people that stay back in the community and realign. Okay. My brother and I have written a vision, just an institute to help Black men to love themselves. You see, the girlfriend or the wife loves him. The kids love him, but he doesn't love himself, man. So that's, we've got to deal with the kings in the community, deal with the queens in the community, and then they will raise honorable queens and kings. I'll say this, and then I'm done. I used to do detention halls in Inglewood, and you know that was the murder capital at one time. Right when it's at its peak, I was faithfully going to schools, shoot or whatever's going on, walking in those schools. I would go to the detention halls. And the first thing I would do is I would do a monologue on a group of Blacks lost in the dark woods attempting to get to the north. Everybody in the room would shut up. So after I had their attention, the next thing I would say to them is, we owe the people that came before us to do something with the opportunity that we have. So let me ask you all a question. I gave them the definition of a king, a queen, and a slave. And in the middle of the hood, I never saw one kid choose to be a slave. And after they would choose king or queen, I would ask them to pull out a piece of paper, write down five things that you would change in your community. And I'm here to tell you all that if we let our children direct the correction of our environment, they will solve it in less than 5 years. If we would just talk to them, listen to them, and just ask them, are you a king, a queen, or a slave? Now you think about that for a minute. Not one kid in Inglewood during its height of murder ever suggested they were a slave, even jokingly. So that's all I have to say about it. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, brother. All right. So we have Sister Barbara, Sister Felicia, Brother Kareem, Brother Muda, Brother Isaiah, and Brother Kareem in the queue. Sister Barbara?
Hello. Good evening. This is Sister Barbara. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I'm good. The gentleman that was speaking about Wall Street, not so much Wall Street, but about the stocks, buying stocks and how to go about it, he's got a real good point. And that's something that I was wanting to ask the lady, that the administrator, the school administrator, if she had thought about trying to, and start at low level and try to build these kids up in as far as how to handle their money. And that can be done real easy. You can print up your own little dollars and have like little things that you could sell. And I also thought that maybe it might be a wise idea to, on some of those trips that she's taking her children to visit, if she can get them there, visit Wall Street. Set it up where they can go in and see that.
Well, she's in Manhattan, so that's That's not hard. But I believe she's trying to say to get them out of the city, because Wall Street is just down, you know, a train ride away.
Yeah.
I believe she's trying to get them into a whole other environment so that they can see something outside of city life. But I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, I'm just saying, though, if she's in Manhattan, Wall Street is in Manhattan. So.
But it's a different atmosphere than what they're used to. And it's something totally different, something that's going to be totally foreign to them. And it would be a very good learning experience, because we've got to start somewhere with learning about our money and how to manage our money and how to build our money. So we have the money as a collective group to use. And we can do that. We can start that easy. It only takes like $10 and you can invest. You just have to make sure that you try to do it on a regular basis. But you can do it. It can be done.
Okay, sister. We have. Is there anything you want to add in summary? Hello, Sister Barbara.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
No, there's not.
Okay. So, Sister Felicia. And then we will. Then we have Brother Muda. I want to give the people who are new in the queue. So, Brother Kareem, I see you. Brother Isaiah, I see you. Brother Jabari, I see you. Let me, Sister Felicia.
Okay. I wanted to say that I saw a thing that was called 7-Up, and it was about children up to the age of 7. And it basically said whatever they wanted to be before they were 7, that's what they ended up being and doing. And I'm thinking, I know y'all saying that to try to reach the youth, and that's beautiful, but I think that if we start a little earlier, maybe even change the curriculum, go to our schools and request that the curriculum in the school change for our neighborhoods, maybe that would help a little more. Does that make any sense? That's all.
In regards to what's actually going on in our communities, most of the time it's in low income areas, and so they don't have the tax base to put a great school system in there. So a lot of times you have teachers who are there, they are feeling like they're doing like a favor, and so they're just there to just be babysitters. And one of the biggest problems we have is like behavioral issues, and that's really these are not the days like when when you and I came up, where the teacher could hit you in the knuckles with the yardstick or something like that, and tell your parents, and you'll get a beating there. It's not like that now. Now you have the kid, he's coming into class, he's cursing the teacher out. If the teacher says anything, does anything to him, the teacher is, the mother's going to be there up in the teacher's face, and then the school may allow, may suspend this person. So it's very touchy, very sensitive type situation to try to go in and demand that they, provide better education, because it's really not even so much the education. The problem is like the behavioral issues. And so that's just something. All right, sister, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. And Brother Muda. Peace, brother.
Hello?
Brother? Yes.
Hi. I'm glad you called me today by my name.
Yeah, I got you, brother.
All right. I wanted to come to the topic of the violence within the community and young people.
Brother, can you talk up? You sound really low.
Can you hear me now? Better?
Yes, much better. Yep, much better.
Okay. So what I've noticed here, last time I kind of gave my thoughts down to you, I hope you remember. So what I've noticed is a lot of parents here, especially the mothers, do not allow anybody other than maybe the father of kids to give any lessons or give any discipline to the kid, her kid or her kids. And I think that is because he's not the father or something like that. And I think that is not a good thing. I understand he's not the father. For instance, in my case, I lost my father, as I said before. My uncle has to step in and be the man in the house because I was the only boy or girl. So somebody, a man, needs to be in the house. So they called my uncle to come and stay in the house because of me. So I've been around a lot of people, and you see a kid doing something wrong. If you try to say something on discipline or say, tell the kid that, okay, what you're doing is not right. This is not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do this. The mother is coming and trying to get back. Oh, you're not his father. You can tell him what to do. Blah, blah, blah. But that's right. Not, we need to change that. Mothers have to accept that most of the time, I'm not saying the all mothers cannot do that, but most of the time it takes a man to raise a man.
Right.
It's not, there is no way a woman is going to teach a man how to be a man.
Right.
So my one example is I have a neighbor. She's older than me. She's maybe 7 years older than me, and she has a teenage boy. He just turned, he's going to college now. Every time I go to her to visit her to say hi, she's from Africa. She sees the opportunity to have me talk to her son. I mean, I'm not his father. I'm looking probably I'm maybe one of his older brothers. But there is a big gap between us. But she tells me, look, I want you to talk to him because she can't handle him. I mean, he's at the age of you can't discipline him like to punish him or give him a whip or something. No. All you can do is try to bring sense to him. Bring sense to him in regard to his action, how it's going to affect him, affect his mother, affect his future. So every time I go there, that's what I do. Try to get him to be focused because life is about being focused. Yeah, you can be distracted, go out once in a while, but you need to be focused on your goal, on what you're trying to accomplish. So that's what I try to nurture in him. Now,
okay. Wait, brother. All right, so brother, this is we got a lot of people on the call and in the queue, so we're trying to be respectful.
One little thing. What we can do is, every woman, I know women know good men when they see one. Every woman probably has a neighbor or maybe a friend that is doing good, that has good moral. I think you shouldn't be afraid to try to link your son to that man so he can learn how to be a man. Just let him go around with him, talk, do a little bit of work or spend some time with him so the man, because if the father is not around, somebody has to do it. Okay, this man can try to nurture your kid. You just have to trust. Just have to trust, believe you're doing the right thing. I'm hoping the man is in a good faith as well. But just to cut it short, we can continue the other side.
Okay, thank you, brother. Okay, thank you. All right, so Brother Kareem? Hello?
Hello? Yeah, hello, Brother Lou. All right. I just want to keep, I just want us to keep in mind the type of children that we're dealing with, all right? Because I'm dealing with these children every day, and I'm seeing that they're very hardened. Like, our kids today, and I'm only talking about the demographic that I'm dealing with, they don't even want to learn their history, right? They don't even, like, you can't captivate them with these things. You can't captivate them with talk. You could take a child and tell them, look, stop doing such and such, and you can lecture them, you know. But ultimately, I can't tell that kid to put down what he's doing if I don't have an alternative form. So the mindset of our kids, we have to captivate them because they're way advanced. The information they're getting is so fast that they don't have the time to practice one thing before they move on to the other. So now we have to keep them around. Like, our kids are not the same as me. Mannerism in this generation is just completely gone. There's no mannerism. So when I was coming up, I see my neighbor, if I'm shooting dice, I see my neighbor, I know I got to stop because I have the respect for my neighbor. This is my friend's mother. These kids today are cursing their neighbors out. If you try to pull them up, they're cursing that person out. I've been in schools where I had to interject with children and keep a kid from going to jail, or keep a child from yelling and screaming and disrespecting a woman and calling her all our names. You know, this is the mindset they get, and then that is cool to them. You know, sitting down, being respectful is not cool to them. So we have to keep in our mindset that we're not dealing with a group of kids that we could just pull to the side and say, hey, you're doing the wrong thing. It's not that simple. What we have to do is captivate them. Like, I know the brother said the video games is not a good thing, but the moral of the story is now we have their attention. We have 100 kids. Now we could put in what we want to put in. Now, if you want to continue to play in this PlayStation tournament, you got to go through a workshop. And in this workshop, we're going to teach you critical thinking. We're going to teach you conflict resolution. And we're going to give you the key to complete the first two things, which I said, is we're going to uplift your self-esteem. See, but it's like trickery. Just like what Black Wallet Tonight is about. We have to figure a way to extract the money from the black community by giving them something they want. And that's the more, and this is the route we have to take with our children too. So I hear all the, you know, let's just pull them to the side and tell them what they're doing is wrong, and it's going to disrespect their mother, and it's going to make their parent look bad. They don't respect their parent, so they don't really care how their parent look. And then you also got to remember that kids are raising kids. You know, you got a mother that's doing the same activities as her daughter. So, you know, if her daughter's on Instagram showing her butt, she got it from somebody. You know, she got it from a friend. She got it. Her mother's probably doing it. I'm not saying all mothers. I'm talking about the demographic of kids that I'm dealing with. That's all I want to say, Brother Lou.
All right, cool. All right, thank you. Brother Isaiah and then Brother Jabari. Okay, brother.
All right, I think we should invest more into the youth to replace all of the, I guess, institutions where which subconsciously controls them, because they'll see sneakers and, you know, clothes and this and that. And those images aren't controlled by us. So I think if we have those images controlled by us and them themselves, to where they see themselves actually, where they see the surroundings of themselves actually being positive, because we can't just stop, like we can't, like the brother said before, we can't just tell them stuff and then our surroundings isn't positive. So we have to replace everything that's foreign in our community with exactly the same thing, but just us and in our image. Because it really is our culture, but we just don't own it, and we don't own the money part of it, the economics.
Right. I have this thing that I say. I was having a conversation prior to launching this organization and doing research. We need to make it profitable. We need to make it profitable for people to invest in the success or the improvement of the black community. And I don't know exactly what those investments or those mechanisms would be, but it's similar to what you're saying. You know, we just really, you know, we need to invest in our community.
It's not a matter of, it's not a matter of really trying to change people's minds, because some people aren't going to change. We just have to put those things in front of them to where they have no choice but to just get those things, kind of like how there's a bunch of stuff in our community that we didn't put there, but that's just what's there. So we have to maneuver our lives according to what's there. So we just have to change all of that stuff.
Okay. I agree, brother.
All right.
Thank you. All right, and so we have Brother Jabari and Brother. Hello?
Oh,
Brother Jabari.
Okay, how you doing, Brother Lou? How you doing?
All right.
Just wanted to, I think it was Brother Kareem that talked about kind of what I had touched on with self-esteem, which I think, you know, if you could just sum it up in one word, what the crisis is, why, you know, there's nothing that makes a young man feel better if he's feeling down, if he's broke, if he, you know, didn't have breakfast in the morning, he's going to school and his clothes is raggedy, then beating up somebody else. That's just kind of human nature. So it is finding, you know, solutions to bring back our self-esteem. And I, like I said before, I think what helped me and what I've been able to help the few young people that I work with is getting them interested in the financial market of the world. If we listen to, I love rap. I love Future. I love, you know, Dre, all rap, you know. And they all talk about fast money. And that is what captivated me to want to invest in the first place, and what captivates me this day to trade. And even when I wasn't successful at it, the self-esteem that it gave me, it made me feel, you know, that I was more intelligent than other people, that I was I had a lot more confidence, and it turned into like a vicious circle. With that confidence, I got better jobs at where I could make six figures, which gave me the money to invest. And I, you know, I was able to pay off my house and, you know, pay for my daughter to go to school and just things that we all want. And, you know, I vowed that I, you know, as you said, Brother, I get real emotional about this topic, but I've been able to put together it's every trader has I don't know if it's a secret, but it's a system, you know, if you will, that I use and that
a trading plan.
Exactly. So I won't give all the information, but I'd be willing to help out a little bit to give these young brothers just something to feel good about. Because if you know you can make millions of dollars, if you have the opportunity, it changes your life. It changes. You don't want to shoot nobody. You don't want to have 10 babies. You want to get paid. You want nice cars. You want everything they rap about, they can have. And it's just giving them the confidence to know that they can do it. And I would love to work with the brother that I forget the name of the organization with the guns, with wheelchairs. Brother Kareem, to get some of the youth interested in it. Because you could start with as little as, I started with $400, okay, and I took it to about $60,000 in, you know, 3-4 months. And so, number one, I would never tell anyone, like I said, the ultimate secret that's been able to help me out or whatever, but the markets are so vast. There's so many different ways. I trade one segment of it. Another kid on the street could find a segment with commodities that maybe they could focus on, or somebody else could do treasury bonds. It's just so vast, and we can do whatever we want to do with it, and we're just it's just a hustle. All these kids know how to take a quarter and turn into a half, take a half and turn into a whole out. It's the same thing. It's the same hustle, and it's getting these kids to know that. And that's a guy that grew up on the south side of Chicago, that went to public schools, and, you know, I got what they rap about and what they want, and I want to help out and show these kids that. And the other problem is they don't want to work at McDonald's. They don't want to work at these menial jobs that other ethnic groups will do, and it's because of the damage that was done to our self-esteem with slavery and the civil rights struggle. That's a caveat of our culture that no other race has. So I understand that. I get that. You know, they don't want to be Calvin. And it's showing them you don't have to be. And, you know, so that's what I'm on this call to do. That's what I'm willing to commit to introduce these kids to the market. And they'll take it from there. When you see the millions that you could make, I mean, there's, what else do you want to do? I mean, that is the economic caveat that's missing. The other comment, one of your other callers said about integration, and the reason that our statistics are terrible. So of course we have to focus on the African American community. We're at the bottom of every economic threshold, and we've been here the longest, and we've been through the most bullshit. So we should be at the top. Sorry, Brother Lou, I just winded. I'm sorry, I'm done.
No, yeah, I'm trying to see with the brother, because I mean you're the last one on that topic. If the brother is still in the queue who wanted to talk about integration, I can't see his name. Brothers, press star 6. Press star 6 if you're still on the call. I know the other brother that was talking about the medical, Brother Erskine, he's gone. And then I believe Sister... I forgot what sister it was. She wanted to talk about the black banking.
I get that a lot when I debated with my, I got a lot of white friends that work, and for a pretty major corporation. So it's nothing racist about it. It's just what I said. We have been here the longest. We've been fought in every war that this country's ever had, and we're at the bottom of everything economically. And it's because it's okay for the Jewish community to network, it's okay for the Irish community, it's okay for the Italians, but if we try to network, if we try to build anything, it's a threat to the national security of the United States, and we just we can't tolerate it anymore. We need to have a network where if someone on this conference call has a product that I need, I want to try to buy it from you, even if it's a little higher price, because I know that profit is going to go to help send your black family to college or do something good that's going to help your community. It doesn't mean we're racist. It just means that we can read statistics and we know we need to recycle our money within our community.
That is a very valid point. It was Sister Felicia, I see you in the queue. That is a very valid point. Prior to launching this organization, I did extensive research on how some of these organizations, how they're put together, without being viewed as being a racist organization or a biased organization. But they are situated as member associations, just the same way. That's why we are set up as a member association. So they have the Italian American League, and they have the German American Alliance.
Absolutely.
And they have all of these other things. And so
Polish, Slavic, everything. Everything but African American.
Yeah, everything. Everything. Yeah, everything down the line. So we are assembling ourselves the same way. The brother he got on the call, but then he got off. He just wanted to come on, I guess, and promote promote what he had to say. But the brother said that the trust was one of the biggest factors. And he's right about that, amongst ourselves. And that's why this organization, that's why we want to put forth that first proof element first. That's why we want to create that first thing. Show the black community, hey, look what a bunch of people who don't even know you, look what we did for you, right? Because you know how people are, so you have to do that, and then we have to follow through professionally, and I'll be honest with you, I have dropped the ball in my own personal business at times, sometimes out of laziness or whatever, or maybe a minor oversight, but what happens is when those things happen, we are more scrutinized because our people... If they're not coming to you to get a haircut or get their hair done or some other kind of business like that, right?
It's a necessity. We don't pursue each other just like other groups do. It's a necessity. And then if it's a necessity, then they want the best deal. We won't pay a premium. I pay a premium to deal with an African American business, and I know the service might not be as good as a white, but I know that money is doing good, and I know in the long run the service will improve when they have more revenues and they can hire more employees and just do all the things these white companies do. And it's just like, it's just amazing, I think it's starting to change. I think more of us are starting to get it. This is a great start, but the other, my last comment, I'm sorry I get long-winded, is I think one of the other things you should try to do is that, like, a network of professionals. Like I said, if I need life insurance, there should be someone in this network. Would I buy life insurance from that person or the person somewhere else? The price is going to be the same, but the profit goes to the African-American family so they can do something good.
Did you watch the blueprint? So we have things like that. Well, those are in the pipeline once we get the numbers. Well, I want to let Sister Felicia chime in because she's been waiting.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much, Brother Will. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Sister Felicia.
I had a simple question. I'm sorry. And it was just about the African-American truck driver's license. Do y'all know the name of it?
I'm sorry, what is it called?
I don't know. You had mentioned it earlier in the beginning.
About the African-American truck drivers?
Yeah, the business well, that the did CDL. Truck driving, CDL.
Oh, yeah. Brother Cujo is not on the call this evening. So we have a member. So we have a member. His name is Brother Cujo. He is in the he's in that industry. He's from out of Chicago. And he's the one that facilitates that. So if you were to connect with me behind the scenes, I could definitely reach out to the brother and, you know, find out, you know, so are you trying to, like, recommend it to someone or are you looking into it for yourself?
I'm a truck driver and I need to get behind the wheel of a truck.
Okay, there you go. I will call the brother tomorrow. So if you're a truck driver, you know this. They're started with the logs, so you know you got to be on the road. You got to rest 10 hours and all of that. So he's probably resting.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's driving because he's not on the call now because he's usually here every week. So I will definitely be able to hook you up with him behind the scenes. All right, sister.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. And Brother Jabari, see, that was networking right there. So if anyone that was on the call that had something they want to bring to the floor, we have about 15 minutes left in this call. This has been a very excellent town hall. We had a lot of people on the call. We had a lot of guests, and I want to thank all the guests for coming on. Okay, Sister Christina, here we go. Okay, sister.
Okay, so you got me now. You got my name right, finally.
Yes, I have. Yep.
Okay, my issue with our community, especially with our youth, I do completely agree 200% with the young lady that was 18 years old with the Jordans and speaking to our youth. I feel we are the only community that is waiting in line for the new Jordans. We don't have the new Jordans receipt amount in a savings account, in stocks, in a bank account, in anybody's college fund for anything. But we got three pairs of Jordans that are worth what? That there's no affiliation to do with the black dollars. There's only Bank of America or PNC in our communities. It's hard to get a black bank and get that out there in our communities. And when we do, they're out of state. Granted, yes, we can open them online, but it's nice to be able to just get something within close of our community. Can we get one in our city? I know that there are a few in Chicago, but I am in St. Louis. So that's not assisting me with my needs. And especially with black banks, we can open our black business accounts to get our black loans, to get our mortgages, you know, to apply because they would already have all of our information. But if I'm having to get it through Bank of America and everybody else, that's not for us.
Well, Sister Trevane wanted to bring that up last week. She left the call. All right, so here's what I will say in regards to that. And I have not done extensive research on it. The last 2 weeks, we have had Sister Bonnie and Sister Barbara look into black banks and black credit unions. They found a bunch of them, so I'm not sure if any of them are in St. Louis. But here is my thing about the black banks and things like that.
I am not too hopeful and hopped up on that idea. And the reason why is because people, there is no guarantee that those black banks will be reinvesting in black communities, right? So it's the same thing like with black businesses. So, you know, behind the scenes, I talk with people about, you know, the black businesses, and they say, yeah, we need more black businesses to solve this problem because then we can put people to work and this, that, and the third. And the statistics say, so there are millions of black businesses, but the stats say that there are one and two and three man operations. What we need are agreements with these black businesses that to reinvest in the black community, to show support back to the black community. And it's the same thing with the black banks. We need to make sure that those black banks are saying that they're going to reinvest in black businesses or in some of like these programs that we're talking about or whatever. But it needs to be profitable because you can't, because banks exist to be, to make money. And the only way they're going to make money is if they invest in a business that is profitable or investing in a business that's able to provide a return. That's it. So if there aren't enough black businesses at that level, and banks like to do big deals, right? So if there aren't enough big black businesses at that level to make those types of deals, they're going to take the money and they're just going to shuffle the money around like all the other banks do. That's all they're going to do. They'll give you loans for cars, but if you notice, I don't know if you pay attention to what's going on like in the market, but there's a bubble with cars like how it was with housing. It's mm-hmm. a bubble, which means they're giving subprime loans. And if that's the place to make money, the bank, the black bank or not, it doesn't matter. That's what they're going to do. They're going to make subprime loans. So, you know, I hear what you're saying. You know, you want to support black businesses, you want to support that. But to me, it only makes sense if there's an agreement for those businesses to re-support or re-contribute back to the community. Because I am a black business owner, and for my first 2 years of business, well, actually, my first year of business, I did not re-contribute back to the black community that supported me. My mother and my father were like, hey, boy, what's wrong with you? This community supported you, give back, support them back. And so I had the Thanksgiving dinner. We give out the book bags and the things like that went back to school and, you know, sponsored, you know, tournaments or whatever, buy jerseys or whatever it is. So I'm just saying to you, that's a realization that I had to come to on my own, and a lot of black businesses, they don't come to that realization. So, I just want you.
Well, my whole thing is I wanted to go with One United, which is predominantly, I believe, in New York and New Jersey. And then we have one credit unit, which, of course, uh-huh. is in our community, but I live outside. Like, I live out in the county, and it's hard uh-huh. to get to. It's not so much of an issue. They do have lower interest rates for just banking, checking, savings, and all that as well. But also just with the banking period, just to open a brokerage account, to get into stocks, to get into everything else. But it's like, if we're not even working to do that, then what else are we not going to be able to do? Because I would much rather keep my dollars in one bank and have a brokerage account with that bank instead of having one at, you know, PNC or Wells Fargo or whoever, and then the credit union, and you have all of these making little to no interest on your money that's just sitting there. So now it's just doing nothing.
Right. Okay. I just gave you, you know, what I, you know, my you know, as far as I have input. Sister Bonnie is weighing in. She's in the queue, so maybe she has a little bit more information in regards to that. Hold on, Sister Christina. Hold on. Let me unmute your Sister Christina. Hello?
Yes. Yes. This is Bonnie.
Okay, so you can talk directly to Sister Bonnie now.
Okay. Hi, Sister Bonnie. Do you have some information for me?
Yep. I just pulled my information out. And you're right. There are, from what I can see, there are no black banks in the St. Louis area. None. I'm looking right now for black credit unions because I believe there are some, but I don't know which ones they are.
There's only one. It's St. Louis Community Credit Union, and I believe it's located in Florissant, Missouri. It's like a secondary, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's associated with one of the bigger ones, but it's a smaller umbrella underneath a credit union under a Black Bank.
Okay. Okay. Because I wasn't sure on the credit union side, but I do have information on the banking side, and I have the same problem. I live in Phoenix, and there are none. The closest one, the closest Black bank to me is in California.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one that I see on this list here. I got another list. I have to find what I did with it, but that's the closest. It's either California or Texas for me, because of the fact that I live in Arizona.
Well, I mean, that was my whole frustration, because you can have a Black bank, but as far as making deposits, and they do have ATMs that you can make a deposit, and it does feature into the online bank account that you have with the Black bank. But it's
right.
If you don't know about the lower interest rate and the lower fees and, you know, waived overdrafts, if you even get them, and personal loans and things of that sort, then of course you're going to go to, you know, the mom and pops, the big brands that are three and four on a corner. So it's just one of those things that I didn't even know about Black banking until I was about, what, 30? Because I'm just going to go to whoever's that's close by, because this is what's by me. So why am I going to research it? It should be good. It's all good, right? Everybody's charging $36 or $8 because you don't have $500 or $1,200 or $2,500 when they say you give you 1% on your $500 that you have in there.
Right. And that's really no money. You know, when you
No money.
Well, the banks, I mean, they from what I understand, from what I know, they haven't been given that type of interest in a while. But I want to let you guys know that we are closing in on the 11 o'clock hour. And so we have Sister Rhonda in the queue, and I want to wrap it up, because I know some people, they have to get up in the morning and have other things that they want to do. So I want to let Sister Rhonda chime in on this. Sister Rhonda, keep in mind that we're closing and we have about 5 minutes left. And then I want to get feedback from the few guests that are on the list, that are on the line, see what you guys thought about this call. So, Sister Rhonda, Sister Bonnie, is there anything you want to add in summary?
No, not at this time. I'm looking to see if maybe there is another credit union, but I don't see any. Not close to you. I don't even see any close to me. That's
right.
Sad.
Okay. Sister Rhonda?
Yes, I just have to make a statement about the banking system, and it'll be brief. The banking system, as far as Black people are concerned, is a big farce, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they take our money to make money, but we can't get no money, and that's been going on before I was born, and I'm 800 years old. And the thing is that these people, I mean, Wells Fargo, everybody got gimmicks to try to get your money. I think we need to have a better look at how to spend the Black dollar, because these people will lie to you to get you in, and when you go try to get something out, they have another excuse, and people are tired of excuses. We want to see action. And now, really, everything is global. I can be in New York. I'm in New York. I'm from the Bronx. My banking, if I had a bank, it may be in Africa somewhere. Everything has changed. And what we have to realize that it's changing rapidly, and we got to keep up. I mean, and there's stuff that they have done to us discriminatory for so long that it's just pathetic. But to get to the gist of the thing, we have to look at that we are in a global economy, and global just don't mean another country. It could mean California, and I'm in New York, and that's my banking system over there. Because the whole insurance is like that and everything. I worked for an insurance company for 10 years. I know. I worked for housing under HUD for 10 years. I know. These people have taken the whole thing out, and that's another whole book, probably. And I'll end it on that.
All right. Thank you, Sister Rhonda.
You're welcome.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, we have 2 minutes left. That pretty much sums up this town hall meeting. If any new guests, Sister Christina, let's see who's here, Sister Marcia, I don't know why I'm messing that up. Let's see here. No, Sister Jennifer, you're not new. Brother Chris, Sister Crystal, Sister Felicia, if any of you guys want to comment on the town hall, give us feedback as guests about this town hall meeting, we would definitely appreciate it. Could you press star 6? Just let us know what you thought about the discussion and the format of how things went. Sister Christina, your phone is actually unmuted, so you're first. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you could have just started speaking because your phone is already unmuted.
I thought it was going to chime out. No, I thought the town hall meeting was great. It was very informative. I took a lot of notes. So I will be back, and I will probably bring a couple of folks with me. And I do have a family member that is a lobbyist, so I will make sure that he is aware of this.
Oh, excellent.
Company.
Appreciate that.
Yes, he is a brother. He is very young. I did watch the blueprint. I'm actually going to go back and rewatch it again and make sure to see if I can pull it up at work while I'm working to make sure I can stay focused and everything.
Okay, excellent, sister. And if it resonates with you, we would like for you to become a member.
I believe that I will be becoming a member tomorrow. It's payday, so I will be working.
All right, cool. That's what's up. I appreciate it. we had a few members. We had a few guests on that became members on the call, and then they left. And I wanted to thank them. Thank you for your feedback, sister.
Yeah, that was great. Right. It was a wonderful town hall meeting. So yeah, I will definitely be reaching out via email.
Okay, peace.
Thank you.
Okay, sister, you're okay.
Hey, so I thought the town hall meeting, it was good because I like the exchange of ideas. And I feel like, in further note, like going on, more like business plans and like actual actions and planning like that would be really productive because I'm seeing like, you know, my peers and stuff, action is the most important thing right now because they're really lost and, you know, they're kind of out there. They don't know what to do. They don't have any direction. So I feel like that would be important to come up with that idea for maybe like the next meeting or whatever. But
Did you watch the blueprint?
I did.
So that is our action. That is our marching orders. Those are our plans. What we do on the town hall meetings is we discuss like general topics for variety, and because we have so many problems. But the blueprint, the things that are outlined, and the things that I covered at the beginning of the town hall meeting, that those are our plans. That's exactly what we are going to be doing.
I think they're great. I think that's a great idea, honestly. It will give a lot of motivation to a lot of young people. Like
all right. All right, then.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Yep, thank you for attending. Okay, so if no one else has anything that they would like to chime in on, we will end this call. I'm going to unmute everyone's phone, and we can say goodnight.
Good night.